on air, online, on digital, and the ABC Listen app. The Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Coming up today, farmer reaction to the cut in milk prices for most dairy farmers.
Dairy farmers are just used to having to cut costs, be very aware of where their spending goes. And of course, when you do that kind of cost cutting, it affects communities. So your local communities that you deal with, where your supply stores and that kind of thing are, they also suffer the consequences of a lower milk price.
And the vegetable many kids love to hate.
Brussels sprouts are a very difficult crop to grow. They're high input, high return if you get it right, but you can still do everything right and they still turn. So they're highly susceptible to insect and fungal disease. So it's really important to keep all of that out, and they're in the ground for such a long time.
All you need to know about Brussels sprouts coming up, and reaction to the opening milk price offered to farmers by the big dairy processors. That story shortly. G'day, Tony Briscoe with you on this Friday, day one of the Campbelltown Show. Looks like the weather is kind, and we'll find out shortly when we take you to the big wool show in the Midlands. Plus, being a Friday, Richard Bailey will be along later in the program with details of the livestock markets here and on the mainland. We'll check in with the Bureau and take your thoughts on any issues via the text line 0438 922936, that number. Well, all the milk prices are in and farmers are looking like they'll be paid a lot less than the dizzying heights of last year. Australia's milk processors had until 2pm yesterday to make their opening offers for the new milk season. But lower pay for dairy farmers doesn't necessarily mean dairy products at the supermarket will be cheaper at the shops. Meg Powell reports.
When you drink your milky coffee today, spare a thought for the farmers getting up before dawn, 7 days a week for 10 months of the year, all to produce milk for the masses. And this year, they'll be paid thousands of dollars less to do it. Australia's milk processors had until 2pm yesterday to release their minimum price offering for the upcoming season. Dairy giant Fonterra opened with an offering of $8.65 per kilogram of milk solids. Here's farmer and Fonterra Australia Suppliers Council Chair Alan Davenport to break it down.
It is a fraction over 10% for the weighted average milk price. It's disappointing, but not surprising.
What were you hoping for, Alan?
We would all like to keep maintaining, achieving record prices, but the reality is the market's changed quite a bit, not so much domestically, but internationally.
How do you take that news after Fonterra Australia posted quite a good profit in the last year?
There's nothing wrong with the company you supply making a profit, just the same as there's nothing wrong with us on farm making a profit. The reality is that both Fonterra and most of the farm businesses who supply them made good returns last year.
Is there a price that you're hoping you might get to by the end?
Oh, well, it's a factor of what the market can deliver and also the competition piece, where because there will be strong competition for milk again through this opening price stage, but I don't think we'll see, particularly in our region, the heady heights that we got to last year.
I'm just going to ask you to do some number crunching here. What does the roughly dollar or 90 cents difference make to you over your year of milk production?
Well, it's around a 10% drop. So it's, if you said it was the average dairy farm in Tasmania was producing 300,000 kilos of milk solids, well, it's going to be $270,000.
That's a lot of money.
It's a significant amount of money. But we do have to remember that it's still a historically high price, and the challenge that we've got is that input costs are also historically high.
Prices were low compared to last season, but it's not all bad news. Victorian farmer Bridget Goulding switched to Australian consolidated milk after dairy giant Fonterra cut its price mid-season in 2016 and attempted to claw back $60 million from farmers. She says she was thrilled with ACM's initial offering.
They have opened up with a weighted average price of $9.10 a kilogram of milk solids. We're thrilled. I was actually just speaking to my husband about it. He's like, this is an excellent opening price, especially if we don't have any floods or filthy wet winter like we did this current season that we've just finished.
So will this price this year or this coming season, will this help you recover from some of that impact from the flooding last year?
All of our expenses are, there's still going to be problems. You know, we've got huge electricity, feed prices, all those kind of things with it. So that's the thing with dairy farming, is that we are big input users around the place. As long as they don't go outrageous or any more outrageous, there's a, you know, this is a good price. It's certainly not $8.65, so we're thrilled with this.
How would you be coping if $8.65 was your opening price?
I think dairy farmers are just used to having to cut costs and be very aware of where their spending goes. And of course, when you do that kind of cost cutting, it affects communities. So your local communities that you deal with, where your supply stores and that kind of thing are, they also suffer the consequences of a lower milk price. This opening price actually proves what a good leadership team ACM have there. I've always been impressed. We swapped over to them after the clawback. We've been with them, this is our fourth year now, and I cannot compliment them high enough. They're fantastic.
Have others in the community in your region switched following the clawbacks of 5 or 10 years ago?
Oh, lots changed, yes. There's not very many Saputo or Fonterra farms up in this region now. There's a very much, you're not a number with ACM. You're actually, they know who your family is, and they are interested in your family and in your business. So, and it, you know, that makes it really nice.
So will lower farm gate prices bring the cost down at the supermarket? Dairy Australia analyst Eliza Redfern can explain.
So essentially what we see and what happens is that the production costs, and particularly, you know, the higher production costs that we've been seeing right along the supply chain from the farm level to the manufacturing right through to the consumer, it is being passed along right through to the consumers. And so what we have seen is that, as most people will have noticed, is that retail prices for dairy have been increasing and have been rising, and that they are a little bit higher on the shelf.
So what might it mean for consumers then that prices are a little bit lower this year?
Essentially, you know, with, I guess, the downwards movement that we have noticed in milk prices, and also noting that, you know, these prices are, they are the opening minimum prices. I mean, that competition for milk, you know, is still likely to spur a little bit of competition over this month, and potentially drive some step ups in prices. But essentially, these farm gate milk prices that we've seen today, you know, they're still above average. And in addition to the overall higher manufacturing costs, it's likely to keep that pressure on retail prices.
So we're unlikely to see much change. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the pressure is still sustained there. So with these, you know, above average farm gate milk prices, in addition to the higher manufacturing costs as well.
Dairy Australia analyst Eliza Redfern finishing that story by Meg Powell about the opening office for the milk seasons. You may remember Brussels sprouts as the gross green stuff your mum boiled to oblivion when you were a kid. Actually, they're pretty popular and a bit pricey, and they do taste good if you cook them properly. Caitlin Radford is a young farmer who didn't love them growing up, but she's now harvesting her first ever crop and hoping they'll help pay off her debt from buying the first farm.
Caitlin Radford, I'm a farmer from Moriarty. I'm Emily Nellis, I'm a vegetable agronomist based out of Ulverston.
Caitlin, this is your farm we're standing on. Could you describe it for our radio audience?
Yeah, so we've got 136 acres here in Moriarty that Owen and I brought last year, which is pretty exciting. We also rent another 112 acres off my Nan and Pop, Gladys and Reuben, up on Baker's Lane. So we've done a lot of work on this property, pulling out all the fences. We've put two pivots up. So lots of learning curves and teething issues, but we're getting somewhere.
And we're standing next to an unusual crop for this area. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we've got some Brussels sprouts behind us here. I think a lot of people hear Brussels sprouts and they're probably scarred from their childhoods of getting boiled Brussels sprouts on their plate.
So true. But you grow them.
Yeah, we do. So this is the first year that we've grown them, which is pretty exciting.
We'd been looking for something a little bit different to do, and good mates of ours, the Wolfert family up at Kindred, who have helped us a lot during this process. We owe a lot to that family. They recommended and had an opening, and here we are.
And is there a market for Brussels sprouts? Like, as you said, people think of them and think they were boiled to death when they were kids and they wouldn't want to touch them again.
Yeah, no, there is. So these ones are all contracted for Simplot. So these are the frozen ones in your supermarkets. So we're one of three growers. So Yuri and then Natalie and Johan, they're the other two growers. So three growers for all of Australia for the frozen ones from Simplot. There are fresh market growers around the country as well, but yeah.
So all of our frozen Brussels sprouts come from right here in Tasmania?
I believe so.
Emily, you know a thing or two about Brussels sprouts, about growing them. What are they like as a crop?
Brussels sprouts are a very difficult crop to grow. They're high input, high return if you get it right, but you can still do everything right and they still turn. So they're highly susceptible to insect and fungal disease. So it's really important to keep all of that out. And they're in the ground for such a long time, so there's a lot of chance for things to go wrong.
So you're actually here, we're in the middle of harvest. You're here not harvesting, not to help out, but you're actually monitoring the crop.
Yeah, so harvest is slow, so the crop is still in the ground for a long time after harvest starts. So we have to keep an eye on the rest of the crop, not just what's coming out. So we've just got to make sure that stays clean until we can get to it.
Caitlin, you said before, high risk, high reward on this crop.
Yep.
Why go into it?
I think that, as farmers, we make a lot of gambles and risks every day, so it's just a little bit more risk, I guess. But for Owen and I, it was a good way to hopefully maybe set ourselves up a little bit and help us. Like, we need to buy a lot of new equipment and upgrade a lot of things, and we're working closely with my mum and dad now. We're all in one company now, so it's been a great way for us to really set ourselves up, I guess, and be able to make our own way.
Do you personally eat Brussels sprouts?
Yeah, I love them. We've got a bin in the fridge and we chop a little bit up every night and cook them, and there's so many different ways. I can't say I used to eat a lot of them, but when you grow something, you definitely take advantage of it.
Might as well. It's right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So do these get good money from Simplot then? But it's pretty high inputs at the same time.
Yeah, so it's a very costly crop to grow, but you get a lot of return providing you can grow a good crop. So that's just a risk we take, I guess.
Yeah, so they are grown across Australia, not just Tassie, but they grow well in Tassie because they're suited to our climate. We're also a bit isolated from some of the pests and pathogens as well. Still a lot that affect them, but yeah, our climate is pretty good for them.
How long have you been going, Caitlin?
Yeah, so we've just started our third week now and we're about halfway. So there's 9 hectares here. So they say to allow for one machine 4 to 5 days to do a hectare, I think it is. So it's pretty slow going when you compare that to harvest of other crops. So we've got 4 crews going at the minute. So we have 2 shifts, 2 machines. So we've got 6 till 1:30 and then 1:30 till 9. So it's a pretty big day, but it's worth it to get it out. And then these machines will head up to Kindred to harvest the next crops after that.
Are you doing double shifts at the moment, Caitlin?
Yeah, so Owen and I kind of swap and change. I normally get up in the morning and turn the machines on. We've got to let them warm up, make sure everything's greased up. We refuel overnight and that sort of thing. And Dad's been down helping us quite a lot as well, so it's been great.
And you're lambing at the moment as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we're lambing as well. We've got nearly 90 lambs on the ground now and pulling some at 11:30 last night, which is what everyone wants to do. It's on Sunday night, but we love it. I do love this time of year to hook in and give it a good go, and then we get a little bit of a break after this.
Is this what, going into it, did you expect this kind of labour at the end?
I guess we didn't really know what to expect. We'd sort of been told a little bit about what goes on, but I don't think you really understand until you're actually in the middle of it and everything that's going on, and you're like, yep, that's a fair bit. But we're really loving it, and we've got a great crew out there now. We've got some Argentinians out there that have been with us even from topping. So these plants get topped. I think that was in April we topped these. So you've got to literally snap the top out of each sprout.
By hand.
Yes, there's 240,000 plants out there. Yeah, so that took a little while, and that just stops the plants from getting any taller and makes all the sprouts even up along the stem. So that was a pretty big job. So there should be about between 100 and 120 sprouts per plant, which is nearly 29 million sprouts in the paddock.
Oh, my God.
It's massive for you.
How, your first crop, Did you make, you might not want to be willing to admit these on radio, but did you make mistakes and have you made learnings along the way?
Oh, definitely. I think you've just got to really listen closely to those that are experienced. Yeah, just want to say thanks to obviously Emily from Agronico. They've done a great job helping us with our first year and we had no idea what we were doing, and the Wolfert family. So there's been a lot of people help us to get here and yeah, really grateful to everyone. Everyone makes mistakes, but it's just learning and you try not to make them again.
I suppose a telling answer to this question, will you do it again next year, do
yep.
you reckon?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, right. So we're going to grow them on the paddock on the western side of this next year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Round two.
Round two. Why not?
Why not? Moriarty Brussels sprout farmer Caitlin Radford and agronomist Emily Nellis taking a moment out of a busy harvest time to show Meg Powell the ropes and the Brussels. Caitlin is the 2022 winner of Rural Youth's Tasmanian Young Farmer of the Year. Now, the competition for 2023 is now open, and entries for the Tasmanian Young Farmer of the Year 2023 have been taken now until Friday, June 16. So you've got a couple of weeks. Entry via the Rural Youth website. Talking about entry, let's head up or head down the Midland Highway, depending on where you are, to the Campbelltown Show, day one with Fiona Breen. Hello, Fiona.
Good afternoon, Tony. Yeah, we're at the Campbelltown Show. It's actually a beautiful day here. Blue sky, sunshine. It was a little bit chilly early on, but we're all good now.
Yeah, fantastic. There were a few minus temperatures early this morning, so the frost would have been on the ground, but all okay.
Yes, all good. Now, joining me, Tony, I have a couple of people from the Cressy School. We've got Ethan McGrath and we've got Claire Worthington, and I was having a chat to, well, no, I was actually watching them compete in a wool handling competition this morning, which was pretty impressive. So, Claire Worthington, I'm going to start with you. Tell me, what were you doing? What were you trying to achieve? What were the rules that you had to sort of follow?
So basically it's just an educational purpose of rouseabouting and handling with wool. So we start off with one sheep each, and we throw the fleece and skirt the fleece and roll it up into the tightest bundle.
So I noticed the shearers there shearing. So yes. it's like real life, isn't it? You're yeah. waiting for the fleece to come off.
Yes, it's a great way for all the schools to come together and compete against each other. And then to end each rouseabouting thing, we do a belly tossing to get extra points.
So that's not an actual sheep, that's a fleece.
Yes, that's a part of the fleece.
For people who don't know.
So that's part of their belly, so under their legs that touch the grass. So you roll it up real tight into a bundle and throw it into the bucket to gain extra points.
Okay, so who else are you competing against? What sort of school or what schools?
So we've got Lilydale, Bothwell, Campbelltown, Oatlands, yeah.
And your Cressy.
And Cressy, yes.
Yeah, okay. We've also got Ethan McGrath here. Ethan, what were some of the things you're looking at? You're actually looking at quality of fleece as well?
Yeah, just the quality. Well,
because you've got a couple of different categories that you have to sort it into or get it ready for.
Yeah, well, we got one. We got qualities between one and three.
Yep.
One being the worst as you can get.
Yep.
You still make money off it. And two's your sort of middle finer one. And then your last one's your three, which you make more money off at a kilo. And yeah.
So you're putting that as a rouseabout, are you putting that in different areas?
Yeah, they all go in different bags. So you've got a class one bag, class two, and class three. You just put what you think goes into one bag, like the categories, and you put them all in one bag, squash it down, put your bale pins in, and then that bale's done, and then you just keep going on for the day.
Was this a timed competition? Or?
Not really timed, I don't think. I think mostly just points of how, like, you've done it.
How like professional you are.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
It sounds like you're sort of almost wool classing, or you're not quite doing that, or?
No, not really. You're just getting the wool ready and pulling all the skirts and stuff off and just basically preparing it for the scoring.
Okay. Yeah. So, Claire Worthington, is this something that's preparing you for potential work?
Yes. It's a great opportunity to see the future opportunities out there in the wool industry and sheep industry. And it's also a great way for the community. So, as Cressy students, we go out to different sheds and practice at different sheds of how to rouse about and look after the wool and how to properly grade and mark the wool. And also it's great with the community because the community offer a sheep to bring to our school and work with at our school as well.
Okay, and is this something that you think you might like to work in, the agricultural industry, maybe even more?
Yes, so my future pathways are animal livestock management, so I would like to work with the sheep and cows quite often.
Okay, and what about you, Ethan McGrath?
Oh, yeah, about the same way for me, about agricultural, mostly groundwork, but whatever pops into place would be all right if you get my certificate in it.
Well, you've done well today. You actually won that competition against the other schools in wool handling. You're happy with that?
Yeah, very. Well, the first time, I think, in a couple of years we've got on the podium. Got first ones on the plaque they gave us today. So, yeah, overall, real good.
Okay, well done. Thank you so much, guys. Claire Worthington and Ethan McGrath from Cressy District High School. Thanks for joining the Country Hour. And Tony, we're going on to our next story here, and we've got Georgie Wallace, who's a well-known part of the Campbelltown show. And Georgie, you've done really well in the wool section and in the ram section, the sheep section here at the Campbelltown show.
Yeah, good afternoon, Fiona. Yes, no, done very well, very, very pleasing in both sections. Yeah, so it's always a thrill. I always enjoy coming to the Campbelltown show and bringing my sheep and fleeces along and supporting it. And for me, it's a bit of a stepping stone taking our team to Bendigo next month. So I've got the sheep there and they're up and ready to go. So it's
fantastic, because there were problems last year, wasn't there, with Bendigo? Was that COVID or was it the year before?
Last year wasn't so bad, but the 2 years prior to that were very difficult. We actually got to Bendigo and then got everything unloaded and for the show to be cancelled at 5 o'clock that afternoon. Anyway,
tell me about this fleece. Now, we're in the fleece section here. We've got a whole lot of fleeces on display, and one of yours is actually underneath a plastic dome here, looking very important. Tell me about it.
Yeah, no, very pleasing. We've won the Grand Champion Fleece of the show, which is very satisfying. This fleece came off a show ram that we had in our team last year, and he tested about 14.5 as a hogget, I think, and this fleece came in at 16.2 last year, so and it's skirted back to 7 kilos, which is a pretty good
That's
weight.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Very good weight for that quality. So, I was very... When I put them all together and got them ready here a week ago, I was pretty happy with that fleece. So I thought it'd be competitive, put it that way.
So for the average person listening out there, what sort of things would that type of fleece go into?
Oh, that'd go into your high-end fashion. It'd be, Vitali Barberis type of processes would buy that. So, yeah, that fleece would end up in just to men's suiting and high fashion woolen products is where that would go. Yeah.
And you bring a couple of sheep along as well.
Yes, I do. Yes, I bought 10 sheep today. So I bought 3 ewes and 7 rams. And, so they've been going pretty well so far. So
I saw you had a big blue ribbon over one of them.
Yes, yeah. So, they've been performing pretty well. Anyway, we haven't finished the end of the day yet, Fiona. So, it's still a little way to go, but the sheep are performing very well. So...
Oh, anyway, fantastic.
So pleasing.
Yes. Yep. Well, another Campbelltown show done really well.
Well, I enjoy it.
For Georgie Wallace. Thank you for joining the Country Hour.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Now, I've got the attention of Mr. Calvert here. Thank you so much for joining the Country Hour. Now, you're an honorary member Honorary Live member of the Campbelltown show. So you've been involved a fair while.
Yeah, most of my life. I've been sort of coming here since I was a young child, and I showed here for several years, and I've been involved one way or another for the best part of my life.
You've seen it change over the years, no doubt.
Seen a lot of changes. You know, fashions come and go, and we see that with sheep breeding, and so there's been quite a bit of change over the years.
You'd see that a lot with sheep breeding in terms of size and types of fleeces?
When they sort of brought in micron testing... That's when things really changed. Some of these sort of positive testing sheep that are bigger than the traditional sort of superfine sheep came to the fore, and now it's all about profit drivers and economics, so that's sort of been a fashion change there.
Andrew Calvert, you work with Georgie Wallace. She said she got 7 kilos of fleece off one of these sheep here, winning fleece. Is that more than what we would have had in decades past?
Oh, yes. A super fine sheep would have been, 2.5 to 3 kilos. Now we're seeing sheep microning just similarly, cutting, up to 7 kilos. So, and doing that in the commercial world. So,
well, it's got to be profitable, doesn't it? And that's why we've moved that direction.
Yeah, and combine, fertility. People are chasing fertility, muscle and fat. They're chasing the profit drivers. So
they want to get twins
and they need
if possible.
To because, yeah, they want to, fertility is a big profit driver. So the more lambs you can wean, the more profitable the operation. So,
pretty much over the decades, the wool industry's just got more, got smarter economically.
Well, it's evolved. We've seen it happen in the cattle industry and the pig industry where they were sort of using estimated breeding values and things. Now we're seeing that come into the merino. Into the merino world, and we've got access to a number of new tools, and people are taking advantage of it.
Are you seeing many younger people come through?
Oh, there's plenty of younger people coming through, but what they're wanting is different information. You can't starve them of information, so they're looking for indexes and ASBVs and this sort of thing because they understand that, and. Yeah, so we've got to move, a stud needs to, in order to remain relevant, I've got to move with the times.
And your business itself, you've got your sons in your business, so I suppose you're doing the same
their
thing
business,
too.
I mean, I just tag along and give them a bit of encouragement and pretty well do all the sheep classing side of it.
Yeah.
But that's been really satisfying to see, the way that's all come about, and they're totally committed and... it just shows you've got passion and it's in your heart, then, the rest of it's pretty basic. So it's, really pleasing to see what they've done.
Okay, Andrew Calvert, honorary member of the Campbelltown Show Society. You've been around for quite a long time. Mm. Thank you so much for joining the Country
Cheers,
Hour.
Cheers.
And back to you, Tony, and we're going to catch up with you a little bit later in the program.
Certainly are. Fiona Breen from the Campbelltown Show. More from the show shortly. Also, Richard Bailey with a check on the livestock markets. And we will update the weather forecast for you very shortly. First up, the news headlines with Ellie Ward.
Thanks, Tony. The Fair Work Commission has ruled the minimum wage will go up by 5.75% from July. In addition, a one-off step up in the base level of minimum wages will see Australia's lowest paid workers receive an 8.6% rise in their pay rates from next month. Workers on award rates will also see their hourly pay increase by 5.75%. A Tasmanian electoral analyst says the state government only retained control of Parliament yesterday because the opposition and independents chose not to block the budget. Last night, the government lost an adjournment vote in the lower house as the opposition and independents accused the Premier, Jeremy Rockliffe, of withholding documents he was required to table. A police task force deployed to the Hobart CBD to tackle antisocial behaviour has arrested 21 people in 3 weeks. The high visibility task force was implemented at the start of May after retailers reported an increase in antisocial behaviour and youth crime. And the Federal Education Minister says he's open to changing how HECS help debts are paid back, including how indexation is applied to the original debt. Yesterday, indexation of more than 7% was applied to HECS debts, adding more than $1,000 to the average student loan. More news at 1 o'clock.
And let's check the weather right now. We have Matthew Thomas from the Bureau. G'day, Matthew.
G'day, Tony.
Well, it's a great looking winter's day where I am. Is it like that right around the state?
It's about the west of the state. We do have some cloudy conditions and probably some light showers there. And we've got a little bit of high-level cirrus just pushing into the north of the state, mainly about the northwest at the moment. We have seen some showers about the western, central and southern parts in the 24 hours to 9 a.m. And the highest totals were about the west. But there are 1 or 2 millimetres down around the Huon and also about the northwest. And since 9 a.m, most of the rainfall has been along the west coast, but falls have generally less than 1 millimetre. What we can expect for the remainder of today is we'll just see some light showers about the west, really looking at only probably 1 to 3 millimetres in those showers, not terribly much. Should be fine elsewhere. It was a cold start. We did get down to -4 at Fingal this morning. But tomorrow won't be quite as cold. We'll see some higher level cloud over the state, but we'll also have a cold front just approaching from the south, just brushing the south and the the west and the south of the state, and then just running up the east coast with some showers about the west and the south, mainly about the west with around 1 to 10 millimetres. We might see 1 to 2 millimetres into the Huon, and just a chance of a shower elsewhere about the south tomorrow. We see a ridge of high pressure build very quickly to the west later on Saturday and move over the state very early on Sunday, so that we end up with light winds on Sunday. We'll see some morning frost and fog about over the state, but it should be a fine day. We will see some northeasterly winds begin to develop about the northwest of the state during the course of the day, but not expecting any shower activity. We just might see some cloud build about the northwest into Monday. Once again, some morning frost and fog. There will be some light showers developing about the north later in the day, most likely about elevated parts or the upper east coast. Also a slight chance they might be along the northwest coast, but rainfall amounts should be fairly modest, just really 1 to 5 millimetres, and most of that will be over elevated ground. But on Tuesday, those showers will begin to pick up with the high-pressure system just sitting over the Tasman Sea, remaining fairly stationary, and showers about the north and the upper east coast extending to remaining central and eastern parts during the afternoon and evening. Now, with that high-pressure system remaining stationary, it does mean the showers just will continue into the north through Wednesday and Thursday. And Thursday next week in particular is looking a little concerning about the northwest in terms of potential for river rises.
Okay, so plenty of rain there, obviously.
Yeah.
We know how much at this stage?
Well,
too early?
Look, there's a bit of model uncertainty, but it's certainly we could be at least looking at 20 to 40 millimetres, but maybe higher totals up against the tiers.
Okay. Warnings, what have we got?
So we have no warnings for today, but we do have strong wind warnings for eastern and southern coastal waters from St Helens Point to Low Rocky Point for tomorrow, and that does also include for the channel.
And the coastal waters and swell, what's happening there, Matthew?
So for the remainder of today, west to northwesterly winds of 15 to 25 knots, about the south grading to 10 to 20 knots about the north, and the winds tending northwesterly, definite northwesterly into the afternoon. But into tomorrow, we'll have northwesterly winds 20 to 30 knots about the south and 10 to 20 knots about the north. And those winds about the south will shift southwesterly in the morning, with that southwesterly change pushing through remaining waters later in the morning, and winds increasing to 20 to 30 knots about the east. Offshore for a period during the afternoon. And then as that ridge of high pressure pushes in late in the evening, the winds will tend more southerly and ease down to around 10 to 15 knots into the evening. In terms of the swells, around the west and south, we've got a southwesterly of 4 to 5 metres decaying to 3.5 to 4 metres by late evening, through the north or westerly of 1 to 2 metres, about the east, a southerly of 1 to 2 metres, tending southwesterly to 3 metres offshore in the south. The wave rider buoy at Cape Sorrel shows a significant wave of 4.4 metres, a maximum wave of 6.3 metres, a 14-second period. The wave rider buoy at Maria Island shows a significant wave of 1.7 metres, a maximum wave of 3.3 metres, and a 12-second period.
Beautiful. Thank you, Matthew.
Have a great day.
You too. Matthew Thomas from the Bureau with all the latest information for you on the Country Hour. Coming up a little bit later in the program, we'll have Richard Bailey with all the details of what's happening in the livestock markets. But in just a moment, we'll take you back to the Campbelltown Show.
You get to a certain age and your knees creak, your back twinges, and your shoulder makes a funny noise when you reach over your head. Oh, that's not good. It sounds like you need a good physio. And I've got one in mind. I'm Mel Bush, and this weekend, physiotherapist Fiona Hamilton is helping you get strong and supple again. So give us a call and see if she can help with your physio talkback tomorrow morning from 10 on ABC Radio Hobart.
It's the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
And without further ado, let's head back to the Campbelltown show and Fiona Breen. Hello, Fiona.
Hello, Tony. And as mentioned, I'm standing in the area where they have all the fleeces on display. Beautiful fleeces, lots of ribbons, looks very special. Some of them under domes, others on special tables all by themselves. And one of the winners is Bruce Dunbabin from the East Coast. He's the winner of an award called the Vitali Barberis Canonico. I always get that one wrong. Bruce, welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you, Fiona. Good afternoon.
Now, tell me firstly about this award. This is an Italian company, and they've come back into sort of holding this award.
Absolutely. So it used to be the New England Wool Trophy. So New England Wool was made up of Vitali Barberis Canonico and Raider. So they've just split in the last 12 months or so. So Vitali Barberis Canonico have taken on this wool prize. It's a prize for superfine merino wool. So.
Okay, well, we can see your fleece there on the table. It looks beautiful. Tell me some of its best qualities and why did it win?
It's very suitable to the Italian spinner market, and particularly to Barberis. They would be one of the top Italian spinners, one of the top spinners in the world. So it's particularly suited to those guys because it's a very fine fleece. It's very consistent. It's very sound. They're very particular in their high specs that they require for that spinner's market.
And that means sort of strength and fineness and elasticity and...
And cleanliness.
It looks very clean.
Yes, absolutely. So all those things that make a really good fleece and make a really good wool clip. So they're very particular in what they want. So we've been very fortunate to win it this year. Absolutely.
Now, you're at Mayfield there on the East Coast. So that country there... Is the fleece clean because that's good country suited to merinos?
It is, absolutely it is. We're quite dry normally. We've had three good years, but these sheep, these are weathers. These couple of fleeces have come from weathers that have been out and run country. So that's pretty consistent, pretty... not dry country, but it's native.
So it's not up and down, basically.
No, it's very consistent. So... the consistent feeding is an important part of it to keep a nice consistent fleece. So
are they just grass-fed?
Absolutely. Yeah. Bush. They run in grass and bush and run what we call run country, so open country. Yes, that's where they run or for the 12 months of the year. So we get them in, crutch them, put them back out and get them in October and shear them. So very minimal maintenance. So they live in that bush, open run country.
So minimal maintenance, that allows you to spend a bit of time in the vineyard.
It's a nice crossover, absolutely.
a very good crossover, I would say. And
sure.
In the winery or in the cellar door.
Cellar door, yes, that's all been going pretty well. We've had a pretty good 12 months on the farm.
Yeah.
So this is a nice to cap it off with this.
Getting back to this fleece, that'd go to the Italian spinners, as you say, might end up in a high quality suit. Have you got one of those suits?
I have, in fact.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
They'd be worth a lot of money, wouldn't they?
They are, absolutely.
Thousands?
So, the Vitali Barberis, these type of fleeces would go into their high end men's suiting, particularly. $2,000 to $10,000 in
that
range.
Oh my goodness!
And that's
wow.
Before you even get a suit made. So Jeez. That's the bolt of wool. That's the type of area where those guys operate in. Yes.
So do you wear that around town when you're going out on the town in Swansea?
It'd be a special occasion, to be honest. So not often, no.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for joining the Country Hour, and congratulations on winning that
thank
award.
Thank you very much, Fiona. Cheers.
And that's just one of the awards here at the Campbelltown Show. So many beautiful fleeces and fantastic looking sheep. Some beautiful rams and sheep that are being shorn here in various competitions. And with me is Brody Carpenter. He's got these beautiful little sort of soft moccasins on his feet, so that might give you a hint as to what he does, as in shearing. Tell me, Brody, what's happening here at the Campbelltown Show?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, today is the state finals, so the Tasmanian state finals, so everyone's competing for a spot in the state team to go and represent Tasmania at Jamestown in South Australia, which I think is in October. So the top four in each grade and top six in the Open who have gone around the circuit all year gain points, and they're having a shear off today, so the top two make the Tasmania side.
How are they going?
Yeah, going good. We've had a really good morning. We've had the schools program in between, and we're into the Opens now, so we should have a pretty early finish for once.
How do the school kids go? This is shearing?
They do a wool handling competition, so the professional shearers shear for them, and then they handle the wool. And there is a bit of money up for grabs for these guys. So, yeah, we had Cressy and Campbelltown and a few other rural schools. They really get into it, and there's a bit of training leading up to that, so...
Okay, tell me, you're shearing. Do you shear in your day job as well?
Yep, shear full time. Yeah, I actually shear and contractor now, so got a couple of shearing teams going.
Well, you'd be on the go, wouldn't you? Because shearers are in demand.
Yeah, shearing's happening all over Tasmania. It's a busy time right now, so we have a lot of interstate shearers coming down as well, which is a bloke I brought along here to the interview with me, which is...
Okay.
Record shearer Colin Black from over in WA, which has just recently shorn a world record. So,
okay, so record shearer Colin Black, come a bit closer. Tell me, what did you do? You just broke a world record interstate, did you?
Yeah, so in WA in October last year, I shore 604 Merino lambs in 8 hours, and they were all judged and officiated by the World Records Committee.
Wow.
And yeah, so we did that last
year. That's a lot of stamina there.
Yeah, well, it's day in, day out. That's what we do all the time anyway. It's just pushed it up a notch too, yeah.
So you mainly work interstate?
I mainly work in WA. I lived in WA most of my life, but I just started coming to Tasmania last year thanks to Brody. Got me over here and got me a job over here, and I'm thinking about moving here now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, that'd be good. I mean, shearers are in demand. How are you finding the industry at the moment?
Oh, it's great. It's great.
Earning a bit of money?
Yeah. We can earn good money now and live a really good life. It's, yeah, and see a lot of the world and that without... Yeah, anyone telling us what to do too much, we can just go around and share where
boss.
We want to do. Yeah.
You find the conditions okay? And
Tasmania is the best conditions.
Oh, really?
Shearing shed wise that I've ever worked in. And I've worked in New Zealand, I've worked in Victoria, New South Wales, all that. And Tasmania seems to be the nicest place. That's why I'm sort of thinking about migrating here for that reason.
Ah, yeah. Well, I'm sure some farmers would be happy. Thanks for joining the country out. Back to Brody. So how's it going with business at the moment for you, if you're running a couple of teams?
Business is good. We sort of set out our own program when we went shearing. There's three of us in business, other business partner, Jack Glover and Duncan White. We sort of set a goal to go out and improve some conditions and everything like that, and we've got a really good couple of teams going around with us, and we also got one of our young wool classes here next to us, Matilda Scott, so she's doing a lot of our super fine wool classing now, which is great. So they're coming through the ranks, really young team. I think at the moment in the teams I'm the oldest at 28 and a half.
Oh.
So they'll sort of go back down from there, which is really good. And in our other team, we've got a couple of older blokes, but real professional shearers, and they take their job really seriously day in, day out, so it's good.
So as a shearing contractor, how do you improve conditions? Because I would have thought part of it, a big part of it, is about the shed as well.
Yeah, a big part of it is, liaising with growers and guaranteeing them something to get, when you can get people down, we can get such shearers as... Colin Black, and you can hold on to shearers such as Robbie Glover and Sam Byers and them sort of blokes, they're feeding them during the day at work and having great conditions such as good toilets, good washing facilities, good sleeping quarters, and just updated shearing sheds with good backwards drags, not forward ones. So it's just good conditions all round, and it makes it a lot better time for the grower as well, because everyone gets along and just breaking down that stigma between them. So
how does it go with pay these days?
Yeah, no, pay is good. The shearing industry is moving forwards in leaps and bounds. So it's just going up with the jobs. It's hands down probably one of the hardest jobs in the world.
Physically, really hard.
Physically, yeah. I like shearing. I reckon it's easier than fencing, but a lot of other people reckon shearing's harder than fencing. So
I mean, well, you're pulling around, tossing around a sheep, which can weigh... I don't know how much they weigh.
Oh, you're going merinos 50, 60 kilo average, and crossbreds anywhere from 60 to 100 kilos. You know,
wow.
You're moving tons per day. These blokes are shearing 200 to 300 a day, at $4 a sheep. you're earning up around that $1,200 mark a day, which is pretty good money for some of these young blokes.
So come on, anyone out there that's thinking about it, come and learn how to do it, hey?
Yeah, come and approach them. The shearing schools are great. You can move around. It's a big wage. You don't have to camp away and everything now. There's lots of work everywhere in Tasmania.
Locally. Do you have any women coming on?
Yeah, we've actually just put on a young female learner, which is a local girl to the East Coast, Nikita Jampson. So she's going real well. She shore her first 100 in eight hours the other day, and she's only been going 5 or 6 days, which was great for her. And you know, she's come from a farmhand wage of I think about $30 an hour, and she's gone shearing 100 a day. You know, it's $400 a day, so you're
it's
getting
a bit
up
better,
past that,
it?
Yeah,
she
$50 an hour, which is
money.
Great. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, well, Brody Carpenter, you're here organising all the shearing competitions, etc., and wool handling at the Campbelltown Show. Thanks so much for joining the Country Hour.
No, thank you very much. Cheers.
Okay, and as mentioned, we're standing in the hall that has all the winning fleeces here at the Campbelltown Show. And just to finish off in the last 5 minutes before we go to the livestock report, we've got Matilda Scott, who has organised all the wool competitions, etc., here at the Campbelltown Show. And we also have Simon Cameron, an old friend of the Country Hour, who has a big hand in, it's the Superfine Wool Growers Association.
That's right, the Australian Superfine Wool Growers Association. We're having our annual reunion in Tassie this weekend, and in conjunction with that, we put together a display from some of the local members of the more traditional superfines, which is really nice to see at Campbelltown Show.
So what does that mean, you put together a display?
We've brought together sheep from 8 member growers and a few fleeces from that type of sheep. It's the type of wool that's really sought after by the Italians. It's the flagship end of the Australian wool industry, if you like.
So just for the average listener out there, these are sheep that just are growing really beautiful, soft white wool.
That's correct, Fiona. And these are sheep that do really well in the bush country. If you like, it's a more traditional aspect of the Tasmanian wool industry. It's one where we really established Tasmania as the home of superfines. And it's nice to see that it still exists and it's still well supported by our friends in Italy.
And these sheep that you got here today then, I think you've got, how many you got there? About 10
we've got,
or so?
We've got 16, representing 8 growers.
So they're pretty special sheep, probably worth a bit of money.
We think they're special sheep. I'm not sure about the money, but we do it because we're passionate about that style of wool, and it's really important to us that we're able to maintain these flocks and promote them and continue to generate demand for the type of wool, the fabulous wool that they produce.
And Matilda Scott, you've helped sort of get all these fleeces and some of the sheep together and organised. You've also got your own stud, is that right?
Oh, not registered yet, just yet, Fiona. But every time I talk about it, I say it's in the pipelines. But I've been involved in the wool display here. We're actually standing next to the VBC class, which is very much the sheep and the style of wool that Simon's just been just describing.
So that's Vitali Barberis, which is
Canonico,
one of the one of the Italian companies that we're talking about. Yeah. What do you think of all the quality of entries that you've got in this year?
Oh, I think the quality is second to none. You know, the VBC, I've heard some comments saying it's possibly the best fleece that's ever been entered in that type of class. And just in general, probably slightly less at numbers overall than last year, but the quality is still there, and it's, you know, just a representation of the great season that we've had on farm for the last 12 months.
Yeah, it's been a great season. Let's hope it continues. And just finally, Simon Cameron, a big weekend for you. You've got a couple of the Italian buyers over here. Very exciting.
We have, and the reunion that we've got, number of growers from the mainland. And we've got a big function in Launceston tomorrow evening, and it will coincide with the presentation of the Xenia Awards. And there's a couple of Tasmanians that are lining up there, so we'll wait and see how that goes.
That's a very big, important award.
It is. It's a big weekend in traditional superfine wool.
Okay, thank you so much for joining the Country Hour. Matilda Scott and Simon Cameron, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Back to you, Tony.
Thank you. Fiona Breen there at the Campbelltown Show with some special guests there, Matilda Scott and Simon Cameron also, and he did very well at the auctions, the wool auctions this week in Melbourne with his superfine wool. Fantastic to see. And the Campbelltown Show continuing for the rest of today, of course, and on again tomorrow if you're thinking of something to do on a Saturday. The Campbelltown Show is there. Okay, let's do it. Time on a Friday afternoon to head out to the livestock markets and say good day to Richard Bailey. How are you, Richard?
Good afternoon, Tony. Going well.
Excellent. And still pretty dry. Heavy rain. It had bypassed a lot of areas. But what are you hearing?
Some big rains through the northern Midlands. I heard of some 30s and 40s.
Yep.
Northwest coast, I heard of some sort of 15s and 20s. And unfortunately, some of the drier areas of the Derwent Valley and even in the middle around Oatlands, I think, are only sort of around that 7 or 8 or 9. I mean, that's better than nothing. But I'm hearing that particularly around that Bothwell area, they're in need of a good drink.
All right. The winter outlook doesn't look too promising. But anyway, we shall see what happens, Richard.
We'll see if we can put a positive note on it, Tony.
Let's do it. Cattle. What's happening with cattle?
Yeah, just across the board, almost every interstate market you could find was down anywhere from 10 to 40 cents a kilo. Export cattle probably hit the hardest, but even in the store cattle sales in Victoria and southern New South Wales, you're struggling. Even the steers are struggling to make 400 cents a kilo. Very few of them make over. A lot of weaners and yearlings sort of in that 350 cents a kilo, which, you know, is a long way off where we were sort of 12 months ago, when it's about half where we were 12 months ago, I suppose. Prime markets were, as I said, were cheaper. A lot of the cows, it depended a bit where you went. The further north you go, the cheaper the cows become, and that's because there's some big numbers coming out of Queensland and New South Wales. But a lot of the cow markets in, well, like at Wodonga and Pakenham, are sort of averaging, the heavy cows are averaging just over 200 cents a kilo. That's off sort of, I reckon 3 months ago, that was 300 cents or better. And then your grown steers sort of averaging high 200s, 280, 290 cents a kilo. And as I said, you know, you've got a lot of yearlings that are only making 350 to 300. It's got to be a pretty good yearling that gets anywhere near 400 cents a kilo. So a little bit disappointing there. But the good news, I suppose, out of any of this is that at least our export markets appear to be humming along pretty well. And it's purely this correction in prices appears to me to be purely on the back of numbers and kill space. And if that's been the case, you know, it'll be interesting to see. As long as it doesn't get too dry in Queensland and New South Wales, it'll be interesting to see where we're at sort of come August, September. It's a bit of a waiting game, that.
Now, lamb and sheep, what's happening there?
That's fairly similar. It started the week sort of okay, but got cheaper as the week went on. Report out of Wagga yesterday was, and they had another big yarding of lambs, was that the good quality lambs, the really good quality heavy lambs, almost held last week. But then after that, they came back dramatically again, $5, $10 and $15 a head in places. A lot of your better lambs are sort of working out somewhere between $5.20 and $5.70 cents a kilo. There are people out there, I think, that have taken sort of $6.20, $6.30, $6.40 to kill in the next month or so. And I think probably a month or so ago, people were thinking that might have been a bit light on. I reckon now they're probably thinking that's pretty good. There's a lot of secondary lambs in all these markets, and we're seeing it in our markets, you know. And there's a big difference in cents a kilo quotes between your top quality lambs that are shorn to your woolly lambs that buyers almost walk straight past. So, you know, you get down to some of these secondary lambs at Ballarat, Hamilton, Wagga, were sort of 450 to 500 cents a kilo, which is getting as low as we've had it probably for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I would think.
Gee, wow.
mutton wasn't as badly affected. A lot of mutton sitting around that 350 to 400 cents a kilo. In places, just a little bit cheaper than last week. Our market at Piranha was a bit better than last week. I think the mutton market will probably hang around about where it is at the moment. Doesn't seem to be. Once it gets to that 350 cents a kilo, everyone comes in again. And it does depend a little bit on where the big boys like Fletcher's, whether they're in the market or not in the market. Mutton has held up pretty well, but unfortunately the others haven't. But as I said with the beef job, at least we are shifting lamb and mutton at very good volumes at the other end into our export markets, and that's the good news of the week.
You have a great weekend, Richard.
Good on you, Tony.
Yeah, Richard Bailey back with us next Wednesday to check out the power in our markets. ABC Rural Online is the place to go. Good dairy story there about the milk prices. Have a look at that. And keep safe over the weekend. We'll catch you after midday Monday.